We got to be ready to roll Monday. That's better my focus in.
All right, everybody. We got a big night of football in Pittsburgh. Arthur Smith on Cooper Kupp trade rumors and how it's above his pay grade. He's not going to answer that question directly. He's going to focus on the guys that are here, but he did also acknowledge there that trades happen and that it could happen. We are at Tequila Cowboy. Everybody knows where that is over here on the North Shore. Not that far away from Acrisure Stadium, where tonight Pitt plays Syracuse. And SportsCenter is over, not here, but on the Pitt campus. That's weird, you know?
That's the peril of having your stadium be off campus. You are pulled in two directions.
So I'm actually, I did not anticipate the conversation going in this direction, but you did just hit on something interesting by just bringing that up. Something popped into my head. If I said right now, and I have our bank of phone lines in front of us, if I said right now, should Pitt build an on-campus stadium, 412-928-9370, I could fill that
Everyone
bank of phone
lines
in 2 minutes.
Correct.
I want to get to a point, or I'm hoping we get to a point, where this football team generates that kind of interest. Because the two things that are going on at the same time tonight, this game, and then Cooper Kupp suits up for the Rams, comes back. It's a chance for the Steelers and fans to see what he looks like and make your decision. Is this a guy worth trading for? Yes or no? And I just wonder how many people here will watch that compared to the Syracuse Pitt game. And the friggin' Amazon thing makes it hard to do both, unless you have two TVs. Streaming sucks for being able to toggle and go back and forth between games.
Oh, I think the move here is, now personally, I would put the NFL game on my phone, and I would just keep an eye on it when the Rams have the ball. If as a viewer, I am that interested in what Cooper Kupp does, because I'm like, it's like being an undecided voter. How many days before the election? Like, you're looking for your final.
Maybe this will be an October surprise.
Yes, this is an October surprise. Thank you. I'm sure many of our listeners know exactly what that even means.
Seth, do you know about October surprises? No. He's too out. The MILF hunter here has got other things to worry about.
Do you think Donnie knows what an October surprise is? Donnie, I will tell you before I ask you to answer that it is not something dirty. It's something political. Do you know?
I do not know.
Did you know that Seth has a penchant for women in their 50s?
50s.
Yeah, we had that 40s. Conversation yesterday, which, by the way, I put out Pony's take on Twitter, and we have some people saying it might be his worst of all time, Malzi.
Which one?
Marissa Tomei and Stifler's
yeah,
mom.
Yeah, it's really bad.
I didn't give you permission to put that one out there.
You sent it. You said it publicly, so it's out there now. Public domain. You said it on the air. Donnie's allowed to do whatever. I mean, you do this with many of our guests. You put their takes out there. To the point where some of them have to preempt their interview with us saying, Pony, do not say,
right, well,
do not tweet this out.
Preemptively, anytime I rank one celebrity's looks over another, you're not allowed to tweet it out anymore.
Huh. Now,
there you go.
Preemptively, you're not allowed to take anything I say on the show and tweet it out. It all has to remain the domain of the show unless I send it out there. Donnie, you have permission, however, to do so.
So Donnie can tweet out your
tweet. But you're not even allowed to retweet Donnie, yeah? I guess we can fight fire with fire here. Donnie, an October surprise is a late in the game, right before a presidential election, a late story that damages one of the candidates and therefore possibly swings the election. Anyway, my point is,
you'd
I will get
put
back.
More attention on the Pitt-Syracuse game
way
than
more.
The Cooper
well,
Kupp
way
thing.
More, because for me, I'm not an undecided voter on Cooper Kupp. I know exactly what kind of player he is when he's healthy. I have a conception, a pretty decent one, of what he would look like outside that offense. He'd still get open. He'd still make catches. He'd probably be dominant as a slot receiver. But I think for his injury history and for what the Rams purportedly want back in draft capital, he's close to a non-starter for me unless they moved off that position.
So if he had a monster game tonight, that would not make you more interested in,
no.
in wanting him? Really?
No. No, because that's like being a prisoner of the moment.
And I'm sorry, sports talk show
so
hosts are never prisoners of the moment.
So if he has a 3-catch game for 18 yards, that'd make you want him less? Say he has 4-40, no touchdowns, versus 9-102 and a touchdown. That's not going to
okay,
sway my
on
opinion
There's,
on the player
there are two different things here. If he goes 4-40, would that make me not want him? No. I'm not going to be that dismayed or put off by one mediocre game when he hasn't played since week two. But if he has a monster game, if he has a huge game, of course that's going to make me, as a fan, that's going to make me want him more.
I just feel that's a short attention span kind of take, though. You've watched this guy for a long time. You know how good he is. You know what he's capable of. Like, so one game's just going to, like, get you that hot to trot about it?
It's gonna change my mind, yes, because, well, it's going to affect me emotionally in the moment. Of course it is. Yes.
I mean, just not going to move me.
If Paul Skeens in his debut over here to my left gave up 8 runs, and that was the first time you saw him in the major leagues, you'd be like, oh, God, I don't know if this guy's all he's cracked up to be. If he went out and struck out 20, then you would have higher hopes for him. I think performances and production count for something, Chris. Do they not? If Russell Wilson was coming off a ho-hum game, I don't think he'd be saying, maybe this team actually can go somewhere. Or maybe Mike Tomlin did make the right
call.
But
I just don't think that the question with Cooper Kupp is at all about can he perform. It's can he stay healthy. And, like, him having a what you would call, like, an 8 out of 10 performance versus a 5 or a 4 out of
10
doesn't move me.
Hold on a second, though. It should, though, because of you just mentioned the injury thing. If he went out there and looked great and put up big numbers, it would show that he's over the high ankle sprain and he's not encumbered by it or affected by it. If he was, not looking aesthetically, if he was kind of limping around out there and looked much slower, then...
Well, that's a different question, though. Like, you're talking about how he physically looks versus how he performs. Yes, if he physically didn't look like himself, that would be...
But you just said a few minutes ago that you really didn't have to watch him that closely tonight.
I'm talking strictly about performance. Like, strictly about does he put up numbers or not. That has nothing to do with does he even look healthy.
Yeah.
That's two different things, man. And you know those are two different
things. Well, you tried to give me in a loophole where that we were talking about two different things. So, bam, turnaround is fair play. Take that start a show.
You're still smarting after losing Judge Donnie yesterday, which is fine. I think, though, that the Pitt game is just, in general, I understand the Steelers are a way bigger story in town, 10 times out of 10. That's not being rude to Pitt. That's just stating a fact. But how many times do we have... And I hate to use this word because it sounds dismissive or like a put down of Pitt, but them being 6-0 this late in a season is a true novelty.
Well, it's never happened in our lifetimes.
That's what I mean. So there is a novelty factor for me. Like, usually, even if they were a good team, like they were 4-2 and the two losses were close losses to good opponents this far into the season, you'd have a defined endpoint of where their season was going to like go. Like, they'd be already consigned to, like, maybe the Pinstripe Bowl or something. Best-case scenario, maybe they get into what? They sneak into a New Year's Six Bowl? Because they're not making a 4-team playoff, right?
Yeah.
With two losses. It's a 12-team playoff now. They're unbeaten. They have a tough road ahead still. They've still got Louisville. They've still got Clemson. They've still got SMU next week as a ranked opponent on the road. But, like, we're in uncharted waters here, as you just said, in our lifetimes. They're 6-0.
And yet, like I just said, if I said, should they build an on-campus stadium, 412-928-9370, a million people would call in.
I know.
But even as you say 6-0, here's what I don't want to fall into. I don't want to fall into the trap of one of our old boss's pet peeves where I bring up a topic that says, Do you care?
Well,
are you interested?
Starkey still does that.
But
he loves that.
Like, if I have to even ask that question, I think I have my answer.
Yeah, that's the old, there's like a whole law, like if the headline asks a question, the answer is no. One of those deals. Like if the New York Times publishes something and the headline is a literal question, the answer is always no.
I guess so to me this is what I would want to know, having not experienced the mid to late 70s and the early 80s when Pitt was legitimately one of the best college football programs in the entire country.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't just bragging about guys that they put in the NFL. They won a national championship in 76, and the last time they were 6-0, they were ranked number one in the nation,
yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that predates us.
Yes.
But there are people in our audience who are listening who do remember, whether they're Pitt fans or not, what that was like. Is it possible for Pitt to become a big deal in this town? When that team was number one, and when they were a few years removed from winning a national championship, and their star quarterback was Dan Marino,
mm-hmm.
was Pitt a massive deal here? That's what I want to know, because that legitimately is a curiosity of mine, because it's something that I can't draw upon personal experience and say, well, honestly, in Pittsburgh, even when Pitt is great, Not that many people care.
Well, they're all,
Seth is sitting to my left. Seth is sitting to my left. He roots for all the Philly teams. He could say, you know, even when Villanova was winning national championships, nobody gives a rat's ass about Villanova basketball.
I always thought that they did, though. They did, though, because it's a basketball
Yeah,
city.
I'm not. Yes, okay, fair enough. I'm not looking to debate that per se, but you know what I mean? When USC is great, are they a big deal in LA?
See,
when
Miami
is great, are they a big deal down there?
But you use a strange example with USC. I've always thought that USC, when they are great, is more popular out there than, like, the Rams
now or
whatever.
Well, yeah, because their football teams have moved around.
They're transient
I agree with
football
you.
Teams. Yes. Miami is a good one. Here's one I would like
to know. We have one
of
the great NFL franchises. Say what you will about what they haven't done in the playoffs, but they have fans around the world. Other than the Cowboys and maybe the Packers, they have the most NFL fans. Okay, so it's a religion here. We know Pitt.
Miami had
is
some
not.
Juice when Jimmy Johnson was there, even when Schnellenberger was there. Miami had some juice, especially like late 80s. You get into early 90s. They took on a life of their own because there was the whole, like, what, Catholics versus convicts, or was that the Florida State game, whatever it was. You know what
no,
I mean?
No, that was Miami.
They'd play Notre Dame, and it was like the two worlds colliding. Here are the honest to God fan base I would love to hear from on this, believe it or not, is people who lived in Cincinnati a couple of years ago when they made the college football playoff. They don't have the program tradition that Pitt does, where you can fall back on, like, hey, this is an iconic national title team, like, in the last 50 years.
Yeah, like
years.
The Sauce Gardner team.
Right, like, they don't have that. They have the Tony Pike team or the Zach Caleros team.
Oh, God.
But my point in bringing that up is the Bengals are not the Steelers, but the Bengals were at that point, I think Burrow was there, and so there was hope there, right? What was that run like for them? When they actually made it, they were a sacrificial lamb to Alabama, but they got there. Did they occupy a lot of rent in people's sports minds in that city? Because I think that is comparable here. If Pitt makes a run out of a conference that now is not the Big Ten and not the SEC, so it is the lesser of the big conferences that are left in the Power Four, is it going to get that kind of capital? I wish I could answer firmly yes, but I think the group of people, the subset we would hear from, are diehard Pitt fans. Of course it would move the needle.
Well, let's see.
And casuals who would say the opposite.
Well, let's see. 412-928-9370. Can Pitt become a big deal this year? 412-928-9370 if they keep winning. They were ranked number one in 82. They won a national championship in 1976. That's way before Mulsey and I. Was Pitt a big deal back then? This team's undefeated. We haven't seen them undefeated this late in the season in more than 40 years. 412-928-9370. And when it comes to Cooper Kupp, do you need to see him play well tonight to want him in a trade? 412-928-9370. Fan Hotline's presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. We're here at Tequila Cowboy. This place is going to be absolutely bonkers once we get closer to kickoff, during the game, after the game. It's a Thursday night, Thursday kind of deal. People come down here and party their nuts off until the wee hours of the morning. 412-928-9370. We promised your calls. Let's go to him, starting with Hammer. He's on the fan. Hello, Hammer.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're good.
You're talking about – oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, you're talking about Pitt moving the needle. I think the only way Pitt truly moves the needle is that they have to run the table. They have to have the undefeated season. Because right now, as you were saying before, it's basically a pro sports town here. If the Steelers are running the table, too, and get a chance having a deep run.
Hammer,
into the...
I'll disagree a little. You say they have to run the table, which means actually go undefeated. Let me tell you something right now. If they beat Syracuse tonight and they beat SMU on the road, SMU currently ranked three spots behind them in the polls, and they get to 8-0, and then they don't do a Pitt thing and stub their toe against Virginia, and they head in 9-0, and have Clemson coming in here, and Clemson will probably be ranked right around where they would be. Pitt would be in the top 10 at that point because they're 19th right now. You go in 9-0, you're going to be a top 10 team. Do you agree?
Yeah.
With a couple ranked wins?
Yeah.
I do believe, as much as it is tough for them to break through that kind of wall here sometimes with pro football, there will be a real buzz. That will be a sellout, I think, if they play Clemson at 9-0.
Here's why I don't think it will be, and I don't say this to just be an a-hole on the Pitt flagship station, but the next day it's Steelers-Ravens at 1 o'clock. It's just it's bad timing, I think.
So what do you think they would put in? Do you think you'd have, like, the corners of the upper deck empty and, 55,000 in there? Clemson would travel people because that would be a powerhouse game.
That's a good point. So
you'd get 20,000 Clemson fans
there. Yeah, it might be a sellout because Clemson's not going to be.
But you know what? Hold on. Even as you say that, I think Pitt moving the needle involves you don't just have a third of your attendance overrun by Clemson fans who don't have anything else that they care about. That's their team. Like, the environment would be cool because it would be a loud, filled stadium.
Well, you know,
but
I mean,
it
we'll
would
see,
not be a Pitt-dominated
we'll
stadium.
We'll see how much, like, the brass ring of the college football playoff factors into this, because I was at that Pitt-Clemson game when Kenny was a Heisman finalist, and it was a great crowd on a kind of chilly day. But the Steelers didn't play that weekend, so they had the town to themselves. The Clemson day, you have the Steelers Ravens, the biggest rivalry, one of the biggest rivalries in football, buttressed right against it, and both teams are. You know,
here's why I think
how much time would we spend on Friday on Pitt Clemson if you've got Steelers Ravens that weekend, Chris?
We wouldn't, because it's a pro town. I will say the brass ring of the college football playoff, it's not even so much getting to the playoff, it's the possibility of who you would potentially see if you got there.
Penn State?
Yes. I mean,
so everything comes back to Penn State for Pitt once again.
Yes, it does. Okay, do you disagree with me?
No, but I'm just saying, like, State fans make fun of Pitt for that, Chris.
Do you know that
having gone to Penn State and being a Pitt fan?
I know, but I also know that the same Penn State fans who claim that it's just how pathetic of little old Pitt are gleeful beyond measure when they beat Pitt. They care. The whole shtick there is I don't care about Pitt, but they actually do.
412-928-9370. Here's Bruce on the fan. Hello, Bruce.
Hi, guys.
Hey,
you
man.
Asked about Pitt moving the needle back in the 80s and 90s.
No, I didn't ask about the 90s because I knew they weren't very good then. I meant more like when Marino was there and they won the national championship
in '76. Tom Tumulty was not moving the needle.
Right. I graduated in 76 and came back for games. Two things to think about. There was no real sports coverage then like today. There was no ESPN. You got Sporting News. You got Sports Illustrated. That was it. And on local news, Pitt was always third behind the Steelers and the Pirates. Remember, they were at their apex. The Pirates are going for a second World Series.
Yeah.
The Steelers are going for that second run after they lost in 76 and they're banged up.
So they were even getting lost in the shuffle back then.
And that's even with a homegrown star in Tony Dorsett. I mean,
star in Marino.
Right.
And Dan Marino. But coverage was different then. And most of your fans were organic. They came from the Pittsburgh area. I mean, I'm driving up today from Maryland for the game. It's not unusual today for fans to fly in or drive in from all over. That didn't happen back then. So
that's interesting. Thanks, Bruce. I'm not cutting you off because I didn't
like the
points.
I think he made some pretty interesting points about the entire nature of what we do versus what it was back then. I think that's fair.
412-928-9370. Marty's next. Hello, Marty.
Hey, guys. Hey, yeah, I'm a Penn State grad, too. I've had season tickets for Pitt with my kids. I grew up in Lawrenceville, like college football. Pitt's my second favorite team.
Who's your first favorite team?
Penn State. Well, he went there.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to like both, Marty.
Did you play for Penn
State?
Yes,
you are. My wife went to Pitt.
Marty, did you play for Penn State then?
No, you're not allowed.
You're not allowed
to like both, Marty.
Okay, well, moving on. So twice the season ticket over for Pitt, two different times. Johnny Major's second term, which was rough.
Ugh.
And then the Walt Harris, Rod Rutherford, Larry Fitzgerald era. I saw a lot of passion in the early 2000s with the Rutherford Fitzgerald crowd. They regularly against like Virginia Tech and people like that. I'm not taking a walk. They would get like 45,000 to 55,000 people. It just seems
that's what they're getting now.
Well, no, they're not. That's what they're claiming. Chris knows that.
Oh.
Everybody laughs about what they report for.
Chris, is that true, Chris?
I mean, I will say whatever their attendance numbers are, I think you can tell when the game, if they say, hey, we got 53,000 here, when there's more like 41,000. Yes, I think that's fair.
Chris. They assume. I'm sorry to interrupt. They assume that every student. So it's different than a lot of schools where you have to buy a ticket. It's part of their student activity fee.
Yep.
They assume every student goes to the game, whether they do or not. That's how they bump theirs. But anyhow, the punchline is, growing up in Lawrenceville, a lot of Pitt fans, friends. I won't say I'm the second favorite team again. But there's I can't tell you how many people. I'm in my mid-60s now. So you talk about going to a game, because I still like going to the games. They look at you like you're an alien. I thought it was interesting. Andrew said, this place is going to be roaring during the game. My reaction would be, go to the damn game. What do you mean to me? Why are people going to be at a bar? Just go to the game. But that's...
Well, you could do both. You could go to the game.
I thought you meant more that before the game, in the run-up to the game, it was going to start getting very packed.
Yes,
down
it
here.
Will.
Yeah, I didn't think you presented it like it was going to be an alternative to going in the building.
No, I hope I didn't. Make it sound that way. I thought he was going to make the joke that people used to make about Pitt where you leave two tickets on your car and then you come back and there's four there. It sounded like he was going down that road.
No, but he's a Pitt fan, too.
You can't do that. I mean, if he likes Penn State,
that's
Pitt,
the Chris Mack.
He likes Penn State, and then there's like
Gap?
A gulf the size of the Grand Canyon.
Do you believe Mack when he says that when the two teams did play, he just rooted for a close competitive game?
No.
I don't. I think Mack wanted Penn State to bury them.
Correct. Yeah.
That's like when my mom will talk about, like, when the Steelers would play the Browns, she'd be like, I just hope it's a good game. Like, no, Mom, we know that you're still a Browns fan. Like, we know that you want them to beat the Steelers. What are you talking about?
Follow us on Twitter, brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. More of your calls here. I'd like Cooper Kupp calls, too. He does play tonight. What do you need or what do you want to see from him to trade for him and give up the second-round pick? Chris says there's nothing Kupp could do in this tour, presented by Subaru, Rockwell Park, East End. Get off the parkway. It's right there. Very easy. The Edgewood exit. Event runs from 9:30 to 4. Free parking. It's indoors. You don't have to worry about maybe chilly weather. There's going to be beer vendors there with free samples for people. Costume contests where you can win prizes. So stop by any Subaru dealer to get tickets or go to our website, 937thefan.com today. The tickets are free with that through Subaru. Subaru Partners. All right. We are here at Tequila Cowboy, right next door to Acrisure Stadium, Pitt, Syracuse tonight. Going down in L.A., the return of Cooper Kupp and the rumors with the Steelers now being the favorites, according to oddsmakers, to trade for the Rams wide receiver. Jason Mackey, Post-Gazette, on the hotline right now with us. Jason, you're over there a lot and in the locker room a lot. If you had to bet, do you think Cooper Kupp will be a Steeler, yes or no?
If I say yes, you're going to tweet it out and treat it as some sort of breaking news. I'll couch it this way, Andrew. I mean, I've been over there a lot. I've watched this team a lot. I've been around this team a lot. They need a Cooper Kupp. It makes sense. I see a second-round ask for him. I mean, how do you not make that deal? How do you not make that deal? To me, that is a slam dunk. He helps your team. He balances out the field. He takes attention away from George Pickens.
Wait a minute. So you would trade a second for him?
I would. Absolutely, I would.
What about his injury history?
I'd take the chance, Chris. I think it's worth the risk. I really do. I think he could be such a valuable weapon in this offense. It's such a great mesh of skill sets. I mean, yeah, I would take the risk. I think they need to take the risk. Are you guys against it?
For a second, I am.
For a second, yeah. Neither of us would do it for a second.
Okay. I would. I would take the risk. I would go all in.
I would want to know this, Jason, from the people you talk to, how desperate, I guess, for lack of a better word, how motivated do you think they are over there to find another receiver to bring onto this roster?
I think very motivated. And I think,
like, to the point where they're going to do something just to do something, well, if it comes to that, or, like, you know what I mean? Because I ask that
through the prism of
how desperate are they to pay somebody else's asking price rather than what they might have preset in their own minds is what they're willing to give up.
No doubt. And I think there's a difference between desperate wanting to address the position and wanting to give up a second rounder for Cooper Kupp. I mean, just because I would do it doesn't mean they would do it. And again, I'm not saying that, you know, they would. That's why I answered the way that they did. Like, I do think they want to get this addressed before the trade deadline. And I think they're telling us that too, Chris. But, you know, look at who they've been attached to, who they're the favorites to, who they've expressed interest in. Like, I'm not a big expressed interest on one individual guy. Like, oh my goodness, that's the biggest story in sport. No, I mean, but if you do it across a bunch of different guys, if you're checking on premium number 1/1A type of receivers, they're telling us something there. And they've told us something with, you know, Devontae Adams, Brandon Ayuk, et cetera.
And you would put this ahead of all those trades? You'd rather trade a second for Kupp than a third for Adams or a second for Ayuk?
I didn't like the Ayuk salary situation. Kupp's a little bit more friendly in that regard. They're a little bit more guarded against, you know, what they're, how do I say it, like accountable for, attached to. They don't have to pay him as much. Like, I didn't totally see it with Devontae Adams one. I'd probably rank three in terms of, like, actual interest. It certainly seemed like from Devontae Adams' end, he wanted to go with, you know, Aaron Rodgers or a different quarterback. But, I mean, this to me, outside of the injury stuff, guys, Cooper Kupp, I'm saying, like, makes the most sense out of any of these deals. And if you say, like, well, we're going to take the risk with the injury. I mean, you guys would both do it for a third, I'm assuming.
Yes.
So it's that leap between.
I would even do it for a conditional third. I'd even do it for a conditional third that becomes a second if he hits certain marks and they hit certain marks, because then I feel like, okay, that ensures me that if I have to give up a second, it's because he stayed healthy, because he made a huge positive impact.
Because we had team success.
Yeah, like there's a tit for tat there right now that doesn't exist if they just say.
Don't say tit for tat around Seth. He gets excited thinking about those 40-year-olds that he was.
Poor Seth.
Over.
Yeah, Seth's never going to live that one down with you.
He said it. I mean, he volunteered the information that he's a Cooper
Jason,
chaser.
Jason, while we're on this vague subject, Pony yesterday, very harsh in his assessment, very dismissive of Marissa Tomei as a beautiful Hollywood starlet from her day. We think it's one of his worst opinions ever, which is saying something when you just consider many of his opinions. Your thought?
Andrew, how dare you? What? Marissa
Jason,
Tomei is not...
Here's your thing though. I've been around you enough where every time there's a conversation about a female celebrity, you say, "I have a hot wife. I don't even have to think about it."
Yeah, but he's not doing that right now. We know he feels that way, but he is even poo-pooing
you.
He's the late Dikembe Mutombo would be proud. He's finger wagging you for kissing Marissa Tomei.
Because I'm just, my wife is so incredible. He's one of those guys.
I'm a big fan of my wife, but I can still admit that Marissa Tomei is a beautiful woman, and you're wrong for not seeing that.
Thank you. That's all we need to hear.
True, Andrew.
I'm tweeting that out. Jason Mackey, Marissa Tomei,
I love my
much
wife.
Higher than my wife.
Oh, well, here you go. See, he's not going to want to do any of this kind of thing again because you're going to misrepresent him.
All right, Jason. We are crunch for time, so we'll do this again next week. Okay, buddy?
All right, guys. Take care. Thanks.
There you go. Jason Mackey. So he would trade the second. For Cup. I guess I should have asked him if tonight matters in that. For you, it doesn't.
I do think there's something that's... So just to go back to where we started the show on this, and you said, like, does his performance matter? Let's say the Rams really are motivated to move him. Like, Les Snead has done his sort of internal audit and just does not think that they can come back into contention. Wouldn't it be in their best interest, especially if they fall behind, like, 10 or 14 to nothing tonight?
To sit him.
No.
Oh.
To
just
put him out, to feed the man the ball. Do you know how many targets he had in week two? It was like 21 targets in one of their, or maybe week
no,
one.
It was week,
week one.
Because Nakua
was out. 21 targets. Why would they not, if Nakua doesn't play tonight, and I don't actually think he is. Maybe you've seen
he's
more updated
questionable,
info.
But I think it's if he
leaning
does play,
no.
He won't get a ton of snaps.
Right. Why wouldn't you give Cooper Kupp 23 or 24 targets if you're asking for a second? Because I might not be moved by that, but some other GM might say, wow, he handled the workload and he was awesome.
Fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevy, a low of 38 for tonight's game between Pitt and Syracuse. We're right next door. Bob Pompiani will have... our pregame show starting at 4:30. He's going to stop by and chat with us. Couple of big topics on the table. You just heard Jason say he'd give up a second for Cooper Kupp. Is that how you feel, or do you need to see him go out and look good tonight first? 412-928-9370. Rams and Vikings with Pitt and Syracuse. Pitt trying to get to 7-0 for the first time since 82. Chris and I asked, when they were great in the 70s and 80s, was Pitt a big deal in Pittsburgh? If you're old enough to... weigh in on that. I'd love to hear it. 412-928-9370. Give us your perspective. Here until 4:30. Quick timeout and then a long commercial-free segment. First, a message from Mulsey.
Thank you, Pony. It is a message from your pal Mulsey right now about Shorkey Mitsubishi North Hills, better known as Mitsu by the Mall, and they want you to fall into savings right now on Outlanders. You can take up to $6,500 off MSRP on SEs. You also have this great deal on 2025 Outlander hybrid all-wheel drives. Leases starting at just $269 a month on those when you go see Tim Ferraro and his team at Shorkey Mitsubishi North Hills at Mitsu by the Mall. Not only that, they've also got 2024 Outlanders still in stock, still on the lot, 0% financing on all 2024 Outlanders. How about this?
And I don't care how many reps you have, you know, when you haven't played in a while, loved it. Come out of the gates smoking. We knew that, you know, trying to get him in a rhythm. I give a lot of credit to him because that's not easy. First drive is okay. End up getting 3 points. The next couple drives, a couple things obviously didn't go our way. And that's a tough spot to be in. You find out about a lot of people. He stayed, and using his terms, he did. He stayed neutral. And there was no panic in him. You know, he's an upbeat person. But you really get to see who somebody is by their actions. And that next drive after those three that didn't go well, we were actually off track. And he and I talked about being aggressive certain moments and hit that go ball to George, and it kind of was like got back into sync. I imagine if you haven't played a while and you go tee off at Oakmont on one, probably doesn't start as fast as you want it, but I give a lot of credit to him because
Arthur Smith with a golf reference there that most people get. 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram and Peters. We're live at Tequila Cowboy with Pitt in Syracuse a few hours away. This is the first time they've ever sent us out, I think, for a Pitt football game. Actually, no, that's a lie. The last time was for the return of the backyard brawl. And that made sense. I mean, that was a circle the calendar game. That was the rebirth of a rivalry. It was still in the summer. It was the first game of the college football season. It was before Labor Day. This is in the heart of Steelers season, and we are here talking about, for a big part of our show, and we'll get interrupted and knocked off the air because of it, Pitt-Syracuse, because Pitt is undefeated. So.
I'll tell you what, man. I really desperately do not like.
Is that a ginger ale? Thank you. Sorry, I'm not at a ginger ale in 10 years.
I know.
I'll let you know how it goes.
I told our pal Fred that he was generously asking if we wanted any non-alcoholic beverages. I said, you were just jonesing
about
for
how
a
I
ginger
remember
ale.
It.
Very gingery?
No, actually not.
Maybe it's like the syrup mix, because like obviously you've got that different fountain Coke taste.
Ginger
different.
Beer has the intense ginger taste.
Well, ginger ale
just
very,
has kind of a different
ginger,
taste
ginger
altogether.
Beer is spicy. Ginger ale is a little sweet. I'm going to tell you something right now here.
Brother.
Yeah, I don't know why I keep... Yeah. I'm not gonna stay down for the 1-2-3, brother. I will be unbelievably pissed if Pitt loses this game. I can live with them like losing to Clemson, or even next week. I could live with them losing to longtime ACC powerhouse Southern Methodist. Okay, I know Syracuse is good. I know Kyle McCord is really good. Like classic, just change of scenery, better offense for him. He's putting up 360 a game. It will gall me beyond comprehension if Pitt loses this game tonight. Because you know what you're going to do? You're going to be strutting around like a Vince McMahon, like with a peacock plumage tomorrow on the air. You're going to come in. It's going to be a huge Steelers game. We're not really going to be getting ultra ready for it tomorrow like we normally would, because it's on Monday. We've got an extra day. You are going to be squawking around that building. You're going to have like your Jim Brown jersey on, or you're going to have your Troy Nunes jersey on.
Butler's own.
You're going to have your Eric Devendorf basketball jersey on or something under a football jersey. And I'm just going to be livid, because I don't want to see this run that I've never seen in my life from Pitt, 6-0 to start a season. It hasn't happened in my lifetime. I was born in 85. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to end with effing Syracuse. That's how I feel right now. I have been bottling up that feeling for an hour, and I need you to know it will enrage me.
Yeah.
To the point where I might actually bet Syracuse on the money line just to do something.
I know a lot of people who do that.
Right.
There might be someone to the right of you who does that.
I might be betting Syracuse money line tonight just because I want to have something positive come out of a Syracuse win other than me just being blind with anger.
I want to get back to Cooper Kupp in
sure.
a second, but the one thing about this game is that if Pitt were to lose it, okay, having watched both teams, not going to be like when they lost to Western Michigan with Kenny.
No, I understand. What's the line right now? 6?
It's 6.
I think that's too much.
They're legitimately playing
a good team.
One of the best. Well, I don't know if they're a good offense because they have one of the best quarterbacks in the country.
That team beat UNLV, who was ranked. They beat a ranked Georgia Tech team when they played them.
Yes.
I mean,
not that either one of those teams are going to
They're a legitimate opponent. It wouldn't be like if this was a 1-5 Syracuse team, and I would just be blind with rage. They are good, and McCord could absolutely light up this defense. I just don't want you to have this one.
Well, it's
tomorrow.
It's a win-win for me.
I don't. I can't.
It's a win-win. If Pitt wins, then I've got
good
them
for
at
you
7-0.
Professionally.
Yep.
And if Syracuse wins,
then they've
you
got
will,
a relevant football team again.
Our friend Fred right here, you'll be smirking at him and saying
no.
stuff that makes him want to strangle
Zero
you.
Zero gloating. I'll do absolutely no gloating.
Give me a break.
On the Cooper Kupp thing, so we heard Arthur Smith talk about Russell Wilson and how he looked in his first game,
mm-hmm.
and more high praise for him.
Mm-hmm.
We know that Russell Wilson wants Cooper Kupp because of what his personal quarterback coach put out there.
Yes.
I think Russell Wilson obviously has Mike Tomlin's respect. The offense looked different pre-snap with Wilson. They were trusting him to take Coors Light and change plays. And
yep.
things of that nature. So Mike was the first coach ever to bench a quarterback who was 4-2 and healthy in NFL history. So that's how much we know he likes Russell Wilson.
Yep.
That being said, I don't think he should like him enough where he would take Russell Wilson's opinion on a player and then allow for that to
That would be unheard of. A guy has played one game, albeit a promising one for you, and now he's shot calling.
Well, hold on a second. Not unheard of in the NFL. Look at what Aaron Rodgers has done for the Jets.
And how's that worked for the
Jets?
Well,
right. I mean, and I think Tom Brady did that when he went to Tampa Bay, too.
I should say unheard of for the Steelers to have somebody be deferred to by the head coach that much after this small amount of time.
We're seeing teams with veteran quarterbacks in the NFL that have changed teams where they affect a lot of what happens, their opinion. It's almost like they have more power within the organization than coaches and GMs have. And so what I'm saying is Russell Wilson can be the biggest fan in the world of Cooper Kupp, but it was one outstanding debut, but it's not enough for me to say, okay, Russ, I trust you so much now. If this is who you want, I will go out and give up a big pick for him because you think you can play even better with him. I'm not doing that, Chris.
No, not. I'm definitely not allowing myself to be influenced to that degree.
Brooke Pryor says we don't even have to worry about that. She said in ESPN today, talking about teams and their trade deadline plans, quote, don't expect the typically stingy Steelers to land a high-priced veteran. And that's because they have extensions for T.J. Watt and a quarterback contract on the horizon after the season.
Well, that would just mean, I mean, that goes back to actually the quarterback part of that, backing Jerry then. Jerry has said all along that their intent was to extend Russell Wilson.
So well, she didn't name Russell Wilson. But
don't you read into that, though, if they're going to extend a quarterback Wilson?
They have to earmark money for a quarterback because
sure.
I don't think they're going to draft one next year and make that guy their starter. Are they typically stingy? I mean, they spend pretty close to the cap. They've given out big contracts. I like Brooke a lot, and she's a great writer. I don't think that that's the right word here.
Does she mean maybe on draft capital? Because they've only moved a second or first-round pick twice in their history, basically.
Don't expect the typically stingy Steelers to land a high-priced veteran. So they're stingy with draft picks.
But then she does write about finances and not picks there. So, like, I'm guessing that that could be part of what she means, but if it is, if it's more about draft picks, then you might have needed a notation in there that, hey, they don't want to part with valuable draft capital.
And you can't say about them anymore, and this used to be one of the, Mr. Rooney, Dan Rooney would say, I'd rather get rid of a guy a year early than keep him around a year late, that kind of thing.
Yep.
That's why they got rid of Rod Woodson, and he, you know, lamented it till the day he died. R.I.P. They're paying Cam Hayward big money. Like, they are an older team. The quarterback's 35 years old. I don't think in this situation, I don't think Cooper Kupp's age is as much of a concern as his injury history.
I would normally say that, yeah, they're paying Cam because they know Cam so well, but they also have a 35-year-old quarterback who's played one game with the franchise and barely practiced. Yeah, I would say the injury history, though, is something they are more cognizant of. I do. And they should be. Like, yes, he is a very, very good player, but I just want to keep banging home the number to people. Out of 41 possible games that the Rams could have played, or maybe it's 40, I don't even know, he's only played 23 of them, man. That's barely 50%. You can do the math. It's like, you know, it's 59% of the games or something like that. It's just not
and
near
I get
enough.
If any Steelers fan says, well, it's not like Mike Williams has been a clean bill of health guy
either.
They're
asking for a sixth or a seventh probably for that
right.
guy. This is a second, and you've got some salary you're bringing on.
Yeah.
Like, he is a premium player who has paid like one.
Sports Illustrated wrote, according to a team source, the Steelers are interested in Kupp, and that they are willing to give up more for him than the other receivers they've been interested in.
I don't.
So that means more than Adams and more than Ayuk.
I believe
Sports Illustrated. I don't know what who is covering.
Is that Strackbine?
Maybe Albert Breer.
Is it national SI or is it the local little SI?
It says si.com/NFL/Steelers/news/source Steelers Pittsburgh interested Rams Cooper Kupp.
So hold on.
There's no author on the article. Look, there isn't. I don't know what to tell you.
To me, that's like a Noah Strackbine thing.
Donnie, what do you think? Strackbine or Breer?
I mean, how am I supposed to guess?
Well,
Breer's got to be putting his name on this, if it's his.
I don't know. I see Sports Illustrated
in the
Steelers
SI
article.
I thought SI was mostly out of the question. I thought, like, last year they said SI was going to be mostly AI written.
Yeah, I thought the same. So maybe this is artificial intelligence?
No, I don't think it's that. I thought big Sports Illustrated that everyone grew up with is like out of the equation, it's just mostly.
This is unbelievable by him, like Donnie. Hold on, this is more pony playing dumb.
No, it's not.
It took me 15 seconds to find out. Read again the first paragraph you printed.
According to a team source, the Steelers are interested in acquiring Cup from the Los Angeles Rams.
And view the 31-year-old as their best option this year.
That's the article I've got.
SportsIllustrated.com. In this story, Pittsburgh Steelers by Noah Strackbine. That's
no, but
Noah.
See, that this is why I got confused. It isn't usually up there. It's more down here. See?
Sometimes, you know, I spent 5 years having my brain turned to tapioca working with Starkey.
Okay.
And sometimes I think this is actually worse for me.
Why?
You're pointing to my monitor going, well, usually the byline
is
down here, but this time it was up there. Oh, interesting.
So if you want this guy and you don't want the Steelers to give up the kitchen sink for him, let me make sure I have this right. Root for the Rams to lose and root for Cooper Kupp to do very little tonight?
Yeah, to look bad, I guess, if that's what.
So Rams lose, Kupp look bad.
Yeah.
Donnie, does that sound right to you?
Yeah, I mean, because like we were saying yesterday, and I think it's still holds true going into the week, the NFC West being so wide open, you want the Rams to continue losing, because if they would win tonight and then, I don't know, win next week, if I'm...
They're not going to move anybody.
Yeah,
they
if
might
I'm
start
anyone
feeling
there,
like they can win.
I'm thinking, hey, we can win this division. We feel good about our quarterback. Our receivers are coming back. Nacua's coming back in a couple of weeks. So, yeah, I mean, you absolutely want them to lose.
But the part about him looking bad, if the Vikings, if Stephon Gilmore, for example, put the screws to Kupp and he only had one catch, I'm sorry, that would affect like my interest in him. It just would. You know, like if he just...
Would it affect your interest? Here's the calculation I think you'd have to be making.
When it comes to the high draft pick, it absolutely would.
Okay, but here's the calculation. If that suddenly lowered the asking price, would that be like juice is worth the squeeze?
If it actually lowered the asking price, yes.
Yeah, if it lowered the asking price like a full round, you'd say like, well, that was just one bad game that he had.
Yeah.
So, if you want the asking price to go down, you have to just like roll the dice that he has a bad game, they lose, and that they don't get like kind of the offers. But
because
I would put it out there again that I think it's more likely that they might actually get a second, because I think there's more than one interested party here. I know the Steelers are the betting favorite, but if there are more than one team, if there's more than one team that could plausibly acquire the player, which there is, then the price naturally has a chance to go up.
But I don't think he'll be available if they win tonight for at least another week. If LA wins and the Bills go to Seattle and win and they're favored, LA's a half game out of a playoffs. The division.
And a playoff spot by extension.
Half game.
Oh, I know.
They can't trade him then.
I know. That division's a complete mess. It really is.
Texas on the Edgar Steiner Associates fan text line. Papiani has just waltzed in. We're going to pick his brain on a bunch of stuff. The Pitt game tonight, he'll be previewing that at 4:30. The Cooper Kupp trade rumors, what he's heard, and more coming up. But first, a headline.
Syracuse and Pitt, Thursday night at Acrisure Stadium. That is tonight, 7:30 kick. You can hear that game right here on 93.7. The Fan. Pitt Panther preview begins in about 90 minutes with Bob Pompeiani and Doran Dickerson. Headlines. Powered by Bowser Genesis of Monroeville. For more, go to 93.7thefan.com. Hey, guys, it's Donnie Football. Get in on the betting fun with the Bet Parks app. Playoff baseball, hockey, basketball, college football, and, of course, your black and gold football. Place a future on pro hockey. Bet on the baseball championship. Bet on Pittsburgh football this weekend. Bet on Pittsburgh football Monday night. If that ain't your flavor...
We usually have our next guest at this time on the Fan Hotline, provided he's not on the golf course. He's presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. He'll be hosting Pitt Football Preview in an hour and 15 minutes with Doran Dickerson, Bob Pompeiani, who was showing me a dress shirt with a wine bottle on it earlier.
Yeah, yeah. They have some great clothes down at Heinz Healy's, where I go to shop for when we do different things. And one of
this
them
is
was
the second week in a row you've given them a pop. You also said last week you wanted to outfit Donnie with apparel.
I did. They had one with a bottle of Cabernet being spilled into a glass. It's just number one for me. It was good because I spill stuff all over myself. So if I did it, you would never know because it's part of the pattern of the shirt. There's wine spilled, and so. The people on social media are putting out there, so now people are making their own wine shirts, and the Pitt Panther mascot has one on tonight. I just got a picture.
For the game.
Well, I don't know about for the game, but for now.
Pomp, I'm amazed by two things. One, as a bald guy, I don't have to think about this, and I just realized you are wearing your headphones in a way I've never seen somebody wear them, but it's because you've got hair to worry about. You've got, like, well-coiffed hair, so that's one thing.
It is coiffed.
Yeah, very much coiffed. Two,
there is a nice coif to it, would you?
Well, I use a lot of product, unlike Rich. He just wakes up, it's the same.
Rich just gets into a wind tunnel every day. no, and then I was saying this to Pony while you were talking to the masses. I said, Andrew, doesn't it kind of put it in perspective? We're just nobodies compared to you. You walked in the building, and it was like Sinatra walking in. And we're the two guys, the opening act, and there are people who did not acknowledge our existence who were just like, Bomb, Bomb.
It's a product of being around for a long
time. You're the Rolling Stones, and we're the
Bomb. You guys are the hot new property, man. You're the hot new property.
Cooper Kupp, do you think they'd give up a second-round pick for him?
You know, I've been thinking about this a lot. Number one, there's a side of me that says because they are where they are, I would do it, given the fact that they have people who...
Okay, that's you. How about them?
Well, wait, but I'm not done. There's two sides of it. That would be number one. They have an opportunity here, and I think in the AFC minus a couple of teams, they could be right there. So that would intrigue me based on his health. That's another concern. And the other thing is, okay, second-round picks. They have been valuable. You know, Zach Frazier is a second-round pick. There have been some good ones that have come along. Do they think it's prudent to trade one of them who could become a starter immediately like Frazier has done in others?
And they don't like to trade first or second-round picks.
Some busts there, too. You know, Lyman Sweet has a list of those kinds of things. So it's just a matter of what they think they are. And if they think they're competitive enough to do it, then...
Okay, so how would you answer it, then?
My answer is no.
Does Cooper...
My answer is no, and the reason is because I think he's just not reliable enough for me. He's a tremendous player, but he had one really good year. The rest of them, before and after, have been okay, but not great. And I don't know what the real Cooper Kupp is. Will the real Cooper Kupp please stand up?
Well,
please
stand up. I didn't think we'd get an M&M reference. I was just going to drop into the line with him is you say unreliable health-wise. It's you can't make the club in the tub, bub, like an old Ron Cookism about this. You can't be worth a second-round pick if I look at your last 2.5 seasons and see you've played barely 50% of the games. And, like, I've seen people say, well, some of these are freak injuries. It's not like he's tweaking a hamstring. He's getting his ankle rolled up on. That makes it worse for me because that tells me he's playing a style. He's fighting for yardage. Just the way he runs out there seems to, like, lend itself to him getting these compromising positions where he could be hurt. And so... I just can't do it. I also, and this will piss everyone off, which is my specialty. Even a healthy Cooper Kupp would not compel me in a one-game do-or-die playoff game to pick them over Kansas City.
Yeah, but it
gives
them a
better shot. Buffalo.
It gives you a shot, and it gives you some attention taken away from George Pickens. One thing I'll say about him this year, in the two games he did play, he was heavily targeted, and he came up with pretty good numbers. So
21 targets in game one.
Right.
Stafford loves him, and I think Wilson would love him.
I think Wilson would love him, too.
Is Wilson as good as Stafford would be at getting him the ball? Is this offensive scheme as good as the McVay scheme is
probably
at getting him the
not.
Ball?
Probably not.
But here's the thing. For a slot guy or someone who does those kind of routes, in that first game, Wilson and 78% of his throws were 10 yards or less. So if you get it in the hands quickly and put it on the money, I think he can be somebody.
All right, Bob,
so here's
the question about their game tonight. Obviously, we need the Rams to lose because if they win, they're going to feel like they're still in it.
So yes.
He would go off the, I think.
It's ironic, isn't it,
block.
They're playing Minnesota? Because Minnesota's been mentioned as one of those teams.
And then the other thing Chris and I debated was, if you're a Steelers fan, do you want to see him play well tonight? Because if he doesn't, you could say, well, we can get him for less. But if he does, he might still cost a second-round pick. You'd also, though, have the peace of mind that he came back from the injury and looked good.
Right. I mean, that's a tough question to answer because it depends on where you sit. And I'm sure they...
Well, you're sitting right next to me right now with a nice coffee and, again, the nicely coiffed hair. So how would you answer it?
My question, again, I wouldn't do it. Just because I think it's too much money down the road. I think they feel like they can draft people who can come in and look at their recent draft success. Guys who've stepped right into play, and their Porter's a second round pick technically, even though he's the end of the first or beginning of the second.
Well, then how about the Mike Williams idea?
I'm not sold on him. I think there are others. I heard you say last night on our showdown or on a sports call show about Slayton.
Oh, you've taken that to the sports call.
I mean,
as well,
it's an interesting name for me.
Bob, I'm getting mocked left and right for the Darius Slayton thing, and all I'm doing is providing a reasonable answer to their problems
right.
at a price that I think everyone would be okay with because he's going to be a fifth or sixth round pick in cost.
Right. For a fifth round pick, Hopkins would have intrigued me more so just because it's a fifth, but. You know, I don't know. It depends on where they sit. If they believe they are that team that can do some damage here, then I would do it, knowing that you're so what? You got to give up some assets once in a while if you're going to do this and play this game. They're not normally doing it, but they did trade a number one pick to get
Minka. It's just funny that they would be making that the determination and doing that calculus about we're in it to win it and we have a chance with because of their optimism about a quarterback who's still getting paid gobs of money not to play for somebody else. Do you know, like, the optics
right.
of that are very strange.
Both guys were sort of cast on. Nobody wanted
him. No, but like in Wilson's case, they are paying a ton
right.
of money in Denver for him to not be there. And it would be wild to have another team say, oh, because we have this guy you literally treated like you're trash, we went dumpster diving for you, and we now think we can win big with this guy in the postseason. That just is an interesting optics kind of thing for me.
I think the Wilson thing, it's one game. I want to see a lot more. I liked what I saw the other night. The beginning was slow, but obviously he got on. He hadn't played in 11 months. I want to see more of him, and I want to see what they can do and what the realistic goal for this offensive pass situation would be.
Was Pitt a big deal in Pittsburgh in the mid to late 70s and early 80s, or were they still an afterthought even when they were ranked number one in winning national championships?
They were a bigger deal than they are right now, and mostly because of what you just said. And they had terrific talents. Tony Dorsett was from my alma mater, and I watched him go all the way to where he went. It's unbelievable what he meant and how good he was.
Did they break through that Pirates-Steelers wall, though?
I'm glad you mentioned Pirates because the Pirates at the
still
time.
Still in their heyday.
It was, and it was those two teams. It was the Pirates and the Steelers, and I think in a pro town you're always going to have that problem if you're a college team.
So what do they have to do to cut through then? This year.
Define cut through. What does that mean?
To become like something where he and I.
Well, we're on the sports call. You want to talk about them right off the bat.
Like,
Bob.
What would take it for? What would it take for them to be leading the sports call?
If they win tonight.
Okay.
And if they talk, I'd carry it into tomorrow. If they're 7-0, and they have an SMU team, which is, are they next? I think they're next.
Yeah, they are.
Okay, so they have a chance to do something they haven't done in a while. I think it catches fire. Can it ever supplant what's going on with the Steelers? No, especially if the Steelers are 5-2, looking at 6-2. No. But I do think people start to jump aboard the bandwagon. I do. I think you'll start seeing bigger crowds. And, the Clemson game could be terrific in terms of atmosphere and everything else.
They also fight a unique battle differently. Our buddy Hoagie Pony tweeted this early in the show, and I think Pomp might have an interesting opinion
happily
on it.
Happily married, by the way. Congratulations on your nuptials, Hoagie.
Because Lennox has bacterial pneumonia, I could not attend that wedding, but I'm going to figure out a way to send our guy Hoagie something nice. Yeah, I know. Neither here nor there, but yeah. He mentioned that Pitt basketball caught fire, like, in the early, late Howland and then Jamie's years. Like, that was a hot ticket, and they were a big deal. Here's the thing.
Well, the Penguins were terrible.
Here's the thing. Well, no, the 08-09 Pitt teams even, like, were still very popular.
I got you.
But they
really
gained steam
after that. They gained steam, and they still kept their steam going when the Penguins started to get good. But my point there is, one, a lot easier to pack a place that holds 11-5 or whatever it is and to have that raucous environment. And two, and this is probably the bigger thing, I know we get the reputation, not a basketball town. People like it, and it was a novelty. Hey, it's the closest thing you'll see to the NBA in this town. It's high-level college basketball.
The Big East.
You know inherently, and I'm not saying this to slag Pitt. This is college football in general. You know you're watching the lesser product, right? Like the less talented version of the thing you love the next day, the NFL. You know that these guys, most of them, aren't going to play pro ball. And so I think that makes it tougher to some degree to get into.
I agree with that. But I also think there is, the excitement that comes from a team that's actually knocking on the door rating-wise and moving up. I know they're, 19th? 19th this week. But they can go and
put
themselves.
If they win, they'll be like 16th. And if they beat SMU, they'll be very close to
the
top 10.
And then Clemson could be in a game that would be. And
if they're undefeated going into that Clemson game.
Clemson to be undefeated going into that
game. Clemson hammered by Georgia?
I'm talking about in the conference.
In the conference, if they're undefeated going into Clemson at 9-0 and Clemson is still a one-loss team, it'll be a battle of probably like 8th-ranked Pitt and probably 4th-ranked.
It'll be one of the great weekends in
football
history.
Well, let's just hope it's not
a
noon start on. Well, they don't have Fox anyway. But my point, I hate those noon starts. They got that Ohio.
Penn State.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Pitt Clemson would be a primetime game. I
think Pitt Clemson might get game day.
What do you prefer? I prefer night games on big stages like that, not noon starts.
3:30, I think, is the absolute perfect spot to put those games.
Yeah, but if you had a choice, noon or
7:30, yeah. Because then I can watch most of the game with the kids in bed, and I'm like, I can just sit there and watch it.
My wife wants me to do at noon on Saturday.
You can't say, like, honey, I can't rake the leaves. It's dark out. Like, you can use that as an excuse.
Yes, you can. I've done that as an excuse. I told when Lisa and I got married, I had the bar very low. I said, I don't do anything but talk. And if you're okay with that, sign on the dotted line, because I don't, and I haven't. And I am ashamed of that in some regard. I pick weeds.
So
about all I
so
do.
your strategy in marriage in that sense for like the honey-do list was strategic uselessness.
Right, and but it's a true replication.
Did
of
you
what
ever
I am.
Pull? Did you ever pull the stunt where she asked you to fold like the laundry and you did such a bad job she never asked again?
No question. I've done that. I've painted badly. I've done a lot of things, and she's now real good at it.
So do you think Pitt will beat Syracuse?
She's the greatest, though. She takes care of all that, so I don't have to worry about.
Do you think Pitt wins tonight?
I think Pitt wins in a close game tonight, yes. And I think they're going to go to SMU, and I think they're going to win there, too.
Classic ACC matchup there,
Pitt
and SMU.
And then I worry about the next game after that, because I think there is some possibility that one of those, is it?
Virginia's next. Virginia's okay. After that.
Before Clemson, right?
Yeah.
So that's a game
that
could
be trouble. That's
the
classic Pitt game.
Yeah, and that's one that you have to watch. Just like I would think the Giants, even though it looks like on Monday night they have no chance.
They're hideous.
But
you're right,
Daniel Jones has been really good on the road this year.
And Bob makes a good point. Why is the line for Steelers-Giants the same as this game tonight? Think about that for a second.
Well, I've seen that, and that makes me wonder, too. And I, you know,
they get it wrong once in a while in the NFL, but
they got
not
it wrong
often.
With Steelers-Jets.
Not often, though. Like,
I'm saying the Steelers should win, but I would not be surprised if that's a better game than people think, or at least closer game.
All right, Bob, where are you down here for the 4:30 show?
It's over there on Art Rooney Avenue, where we always are. So Doran and I, we don't have the...
Has Doran picked Pitt to win every game this year so far?
You guys have access to a bar
and food.
Of course
he has.
We don't. yes, I think so.
Has he... Wait.
Have you picked Pitt in every game?
I picked against them in the Cincinnati game.
Looked like a pretty good prediction for a long
time.
Yeah,
and then I think that was it.
How about West
all.
Virginia?
I had Pitt winning in a close game. I didn't see it the way it happened, though. That was kind of weird. They were down big. I mean,
who was the better quarterback in this game?
Well, see, McCord's older, and I think I've seen enough of him to make me think that. But that's not to say that Eli Holstein is not in that same road.
I'm trying to think of who it reminds me of. McCord is better, but like if you gave me one guy who I think games on the line is going to take his team down the field, it's Holstein. He's got like a
weird. Look at those big plays.
That's what I mean. He's got. I'm trying to think of an NFL comp here. It would be like Brady, not Brady, going against Eli Manning in a Super Bowl, but kind of that basic vibe of. This guy isn't quite as good as the other guy, but
he's capable
trust him.
Of making
but
a play.
He's just like weirdly nails when it matters.
Yeah.
Bob, thank you for coming down.
Real quick question for you, because we had this discussion last night. Boston won their first game, the defending champion Celtics. Chris, and I agree with this, too many three-pointers.
Oh,
they made
my God,
29
yes.
of them.
I said aesthetically it's awful.
And it is.
So
brutal.
It's going away
it's
from the way the game was supposed to be. And I love the three-point line, but not to the point
they
where they're going to fire 60 of them.
They need a wider court, a bigger court, and a four-point line to space the floor better.
That would be
4-point line.
I mean, put it way out there.
Well, Steph Curry's going to win that battle.
Fine, if guys want to hoist 30-footers, make it more worthwhile, but like also like space the floor a little better. I can't watch it.
Thank you, Bob.
All right, guys. Have a
great
day.
We'll be listening.
Thanks, Pom.
See you.
Follow us on Twitter, brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. 2 minutes away from PM Team Power Rankings. Today, Mulsey's ranking top 5 Pitt players of the Akron. All right, it's 3:30 on a Thursday. That means it's time for Pony and Muller Power Rankings, and it's also time to stop blindly paying those increasing auto and home insurance premiums. Contact the Buell Insurance Agency in Gibsonia. See what they can do for you. Inspired by this stat, Pitt has won 9 in a row against Syracuse here in Pittsburgh. The last time the Panthers lost to the Orange was in 2001. That was the year Heinz Field opened. So... Mulsey's task right now as a Pitt lover and Pitt enthusiast, top 5 football players of the Heinz Field Acrisure Stadium era. So Tony Dorsett, Dan Marino, Curtis Martin, all those guys ineligible for this, Chris.
Couple thoughts went through my head. Do I want to get like
Marshall Goldberg?
Do I want to get like a hipster pick in here of like somebody that was an offensive lineman that got overlooked, et cetera, et cetera? I decided no. I'm going with the obvious. One honorable mention, and I will say this, might surprise some people who thought he could have snuck on. I'm going to put Tyler Palko as an honorable mention. He authored some wins, namely the one at Notre Dame and then the legendary post-game presser that were just electrifying to watch. I love the way he played the game. Played unbelievably hard, was a tough SOB out there.
He was a gamer, Mulsey.
He was hurdling people, then getting the snot knocked out of him and staying on his feet. I think that was against BC, maybe. Soft spot for Palko because I, like many others, thought that when Morelli ended up going to Penn State and Palko ended up at Pitt and beat out Flacco, of course, that they were going to get the raw end of that deal. But Palko validated that in every way. So he's my honorable mention. Number five on this list, and again, I'm rating them on their Pitt careers, not what they became elsewhere, because in pretty much all of these cases, the guys were at least very good, if not Hall of Fame caliber pros. Number five is Darrell Revis. One of my favorite individual plays of the Akershire Stadium era, his punt return, he's throwing a fake pass, Derek Kinder's wiping out half of West Virginia on a block. Revis, who's this incredible athlete, is like running down the sidelines like kind of a stumbling drunk on a play that feels like it's happening in slow motion. He goes all the way, though, goes the distance. It's one of the greatest punt returns I've ever seen from a guy that was an absolute lockdown corner and became even better in the pros. So Darrell Revis, number five on my list.
And looking good these days, Darrell Revis. Saw him, I think, back at Pitt for his last game here, or for Pitt's last game against Cal.
He's svelte again?
Yeah, he's looking. What do you mean?
Because he had gotten a little bit. He had gotten a little bit heavier, at like a Hall of Fame type of thing.
Donnie, is that true?
He gotten heavier. I'm asking you.
Yeah,
if
Revis.
Trimmed back down.
Our guy put some pounds on, but I mean, who cares? He might be one of the greats in NFL history.
What, 10 greatest corners ever? He's got a shot at it.
So that makes him entitled to put on the pounds. Then?
Don't they always say the linemen get skinnier? The skill guys, like wideouts and corners, get heavier after their careers?
Because they're not moving as much, and they're still eating like crap. Okay, Revis 4.
Number 4.
Revis 5.
Number 4, ultimately, I would say this guy is the best actual pro of the bunch because you know how I feel about him. I think he's very much got a case as the best defensive player ever to live. I'm going Aaron Donald 4.
Mm.
Aaron Donald was a 4-year player at Pitt. He was exceptional, or he was very good, I would say, in his sophomore and junior years, and then he became a force of nature to an almost astounding degree his senior year. 29 tackles for loss, 11 sacks. He was a monster. He upped his numbers every single year at Pitt, except for like a lower sack total in his junior year, but the guy was just phenomenal. He was a one-man wrecking crew. He was unconventional in terms of his size for the position. It didn't matter because he was just so quick, so strong, so explosive. He's tackling quarterbacks and running backs at the inflection point, the handoff point on RPOs. He's just ragdolling dudes, and then we know what he became in the pros. But he is only fourth on this list.
Man, I think that's low. I'm very interested to hear the other three guys. Three?
Well, I have to give a guy who ran for 1,800 yards as a freshman, only played 2 years here, had the least distinguished NFL career of this whole bunch. Deion Lewis was phenomenal.
Oh, man.
His 2 years at Pitt.
Wow, that is an upset of epic proportions.
The guy ran for 1,799 yards. He was an 1,800-yard running back, and then it's not like the second year he was bad.
I mean,
I just watched Deion Lewis churn out big game after big game as a guy who was about 5'7".
All right, but it looks like, and I don't have your list in front of me, but it looks like a guy that was in New York City for the Heisman presentation is not even going to make
correct,
the top
five. Correct, he's not.
Five.
I'll already tell you he's not. That's right, because he was a one-year wonder. And these guys all at least had two phenomenal seasons. I'm looking at Deion Lewis's his career, especially that freshman year. He was terrific, man. Number two, I think this guy and Deion, in terms of their stat production, are pretty much interchangeable. In fact, you could go look it up. The numbers are eerily similar. Lewis has a better yards per carry, but individual game performances, very few guys have a Shady McCoy in 13-9.
Yeah.
He was the whole effing show for them, as Rob Van Dam would say about himself in pro wrestling. The Big East had its own referees conspiring to try to keep Pitt from winning that game because they wanted WVU in the national championship game. Shady would not be denied. 2,800-plus yards over two seasons. For the aesthetic part of it, while Lewis would just kind of plod ahead and was this great interior runner for such a small guy, there's something extra fun about watching Shady just clown people, which he did. I mean, lateral jump cuts that would have guys grasping for air where they thought he was. He was immensely fun to watch. He was a hugely ballyhooed recruit who lived up to the billing and then some. Shady McCoy, number two. Number one should be obvious. If you've ever heard me talk about this guy, you know how I feel about his tenure at Pitt. He's on campus right now. They're going to honor him tonight. He is the subject, or he is the victim, in one of the greatest miscarriages of Heisman Trophy justice that I have ever seen.
That Ron Cook had a big
hand. Ron Cook and Bob Smizek had a hand in it. They both bristle and get very angry when people point that out. I don't know if that's because they both have just dug their heels in maintaining their right, or if either one of them might have a guilty conscience about 18 knee brace wearing Jason White winning the Heisman as a Lifetime Achievement Award for being in his like 12th year at Oklahoma. I think he probably went to dental school or started a practice in his late 30s after his first year out there. He was practically older than Chris Wenke despite not being like a minor league baseball player. Larry Fitzgerald at Pitt in 2 years, particularly year number two, is on the very short list of the single most dominant college football players I've ever watched. Genty from Boise State kind of looks like that guy this year, and Ndamukong Suh at Nebraska Pony was on that level with the way he just took people apart even more than Donald did. Larry Fitzgerald was a man playing amongst children when he was at Pitt. The touchdown streak, the fact that everybody knew he was getting the ball and they still could do nothing about it. The only team to stop him in year two was Miami. Do you know who they had to use to cover him? Antrell Roll, who would go on to be a very good NFL corner.
Yep.
And they were rolling Sean Taylor, I believe, over the top.
Wow.
They were utilizing
two great NFL players.
Two all-time great NFL players. I think I have Taylor right. I don't think it would have been Ed Reed back then.
Nope.
They were using two guys who were Hall of Fame level type talents to slow down Larry Fitzgerald. So my list is honorable mention Palko, best player, Pitt players of the Acrisure Stadium Heinz Field era. Honorable mention Tyler Palko. Number 5, Darrell Revis. Number 4, Aaron Donald. Number 3, Deion Lewis. Number 2, Shady McCoy. Number 1, Larry Fitzgerald. And yes, that means no Kenneth Shane Pickett.
Also, I thought Connor had an argument. I mean, the guy was ACC Player of the Year.
I know. Kenny probably should have been my honorable mention, but I don't know. I feel like I'm giving it to the West A kid. Dornell will be happy about that.
I'm shocked that you put Lewis ahead of Aaron Donald. I mean, I was trying to go by the
Pitt career, though, and Donald had the...
He was the best defensive player in the country.
I know. It's my list, though.
Yeah. Well, it becomes our list because it's PM Team Power Ranking, so we're guilty by association.
Okay. I think real Pitt heads will appreciate the care that was put into this.
Reef Fittipaldo will not join us today because we're off at 4:30. To get you ready for Pitt football preview, he's brought to you by LGKG Injury Lawyers, 7 locations in the Pittsburgh region. They'll take your personal injury case personally, lgkg.com. More thoughts on Cooper Kupp coming up, talking about Pitt and Syracuse, Pitt trying to fight back for relevance in college football, why James Franklin is getting absolutely destroyed on social media today. All of that on the way between now and us getting you ready for kickoff. Fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevy, low of 38 degrees. We're live at Tequila Cowboy. This place is starting to fill up with Pitt fans. Come say hello here until 4:30. Quick timeout, then a long commercial-free segment. Here is a message from me on McVay Plumbing.
Do you rate your rivalry games on a scale of 1 to 10? I certainly think it's a rivalry because we play them all. It's a game we're going to play every year at Pitt. So it certainly is a rivalry game.
50-minute mark on the fan brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. That's Pat Narduzzi. After going 3-9 in his 10th year, he's got Pitt 6-0. And he had them undefeated in the preseason. That's never happened. And tonight they're going to play another football game here on a Thursday night. We've had some Thursday night games back in the day, like going back almost 20 years, that were pretty big. Wasn't the Virginia Tech game a Thursday night game, Chris?
The big 31-28. Yeah, that was. Okay. And I remember watching that at Penn State, which was kind of ironic that I was
wearing Pitt stuff and telling your Penn State fans to suck it.
I wasn't getting that aggressive. I wasn't like itching to be fought with. Mm.
Would they actually fight you over something like that?
The first day I went to a Penn State home game, like I still had, you know, tickets my freshman year that you would get them. And I would wear a Pitt shirt, just like a generic Pittsburgh shirt with the old the Dino Panther on it, the Dino Cat logo. And I remember, I'll never forget this, that big tailgate scene, which is pretty wild outside of Beaver Stadium. Like, I saw a father who had clearly had children with him at me.
I thought Penn State fans didn't care about Pitt. They did that day, huh?
As I've told you many times, I would put the percentage of Penn State fans who, quote, genuinely do not care about Pitt at under 2%.
Wow. They're going to all come out of the woodwork.
Ooh.
For you saying that.
No, they're busy defending James Franklin on another shameful front.
Which, okay, so can we get into that for a second, too? There's a lot to do before the preview show starts at 4:30.
Sure.
412-928-9370 is how you get involved in the show. We have Steelers breaking news that we're going to touch on here, too. But this James Franklin thing, it's gotten to the point where the video of his exchange with the media there is getting picked up by Ian Rappaport and others like that, and he's just getting absolutely castigated and crushed for the way they handled this very, very, very serious and sad situation at Penn State, where two players have been charged with felony rape, suspended from the team in August. I'm not going to get into all the details. You can find that online, but
It's an ugly, ugly, ugly story. I think one guy's bond is set at $500,000, the other guy at like $400,000.
Yep, so there's a lot there. But there's questions about it now because of what you just said. These guys were charged and everything else. And just trying to completely get away from it and have his PR person handle
their sports relations.
Yeah, handle the questions there. And then he would leave the microphone, come back to the microphone for questions about Wisconsin.
Got asked about it again. Left again.
The guy came back out.
Said, guys, do you have any questions? And then the part that I think is really weird on Franklin's part, and I'll just say this quickly. Everybody knows, I think if you know anything about like how the legal system works, I'm sure that Penn State's legal department said, do not say a word about this. Like, I don't think anybody even who's asking questions is probably expecting anything more than a no comment from him, but from him, right? He wouldn't even say anything. Everybody knows he's probably been told, don't say anything. You can just say, if you're James Franklin, no comment there. Like, does it look good? No. Is it what pretty much everybody who's ever seen how these things play out expect you to say? Yes. The fact that after the very last time, he came back up and did the whole, hey guys, like he had never been up there on the podium, is such a weird tack to take. Like, he smiled, you know what I mean? Like, he acted like it was the first time he had walked up there. Not that he thinks it's a joke, but that he was almost being glib about the whole thing, I think, rubs me very much the wrong way.
I don't think he did anything wrong. I mean, I don't think that there's any kind of cover up here, or that it was a situation where the
just
coach...
Just say no comment. Well, that's my point.
What I'm getting at is, I don't think there's a situation where the coach knew about something and then tried to hide it and is somehow like implicated in all of it. It does not seem...
I would agree with that.
But that's what's happened here.
I have not heard anything.
This is not a situation, in my opinion, where like James Franklin should be suspended or fired or anything like that. So what this gets back to is, you know, there are people that are actual a-holes and actual jerks, and then there are people that just sound like a jerk and look like a jerk. And I just think, again, in this situation, he's guilty of the latter. He just looks like one.
He just...
Because you said there's a pretty simple way.
You just say no comment.
Guys, I'm not going to talk about this. You can keep
you
asking
can even,
me questions.
Honest to God, man, if you're in his shoes there, you can even use the legal... Like, our old boss used to say, use me as Kevlar. Like, if you have to say something, or if you're going to do something that probably is going to annoy your listeners, use me as the reason. Like, hey, our boss told us we had to do X, Y, or Z. All you got to say in his position is, I've been advised by our legal department just to tell you no comment here. Like, this is an ongoing situation. The players were just... Whatever. Just say no comment. But he couldn't do that.
He's got a $70 million contract. He's the face of the football program. He can do that.
So people have asked me...
He can do that part of it. It ain't asking him too much.
People have asked me today, Pitt fans even, why are all these like national reporters going after him? Ian Rappaport, Jonathan Jones from CBS, like all kind of taking him to task.
I saw that too.
I think it's a very simple explanation. I think when you act the way he has about it, you're going to get on radars because you couldn't do the very simple thing of a terse professional no comment.
Do you still believe your take that Penn State fans are not... that his approval rating with Penn State fans is not very high? Do you still believe that?
I think it's higher.
They're number three right now.
I think it's higher right now than it has been in a long time.
They came back and they beat USC.
Sure, although USC was unranked. It was a close game on the spread. It's still it's a Tiffany college football brand that you go into their building and beat in kind of resilient fashion. I said for many years, though, that in the four-team era, I thought his approval rating was lower because he just, and he still really hasn't done this, he never does that which good coaches do, which is beat teams that you are occasionally not supposed to beat. Like, if you're Penn State, which I think typically more occupies the 7-10 region of the top 10, he wasn't beating teams like Ohio State and Michigan, who were routinely in the top 1-3 or 1-4 range. that's going to wear very thin on your fans when it's kind of like a same old story, right? You can fill in the names on the Mad Libs with different names every year, but it's going to be the same basic end of the movie. I do think this year, because they're number three, because the playoff is 12 teams now and they're going to get in there, like barring a shocking collapse, I think that people have softened a little bit, but you know what it's going to be for him, right? Once, if and when they get in the playoff, hey, James, maybe you win as like the five seed, or right now they'd be getting a bye, right?
No, because they're not Oregon is the Big Ten champion. They wouldn't get a bye. They'd play
a game. That's right.
They'd
be the five seed. Hey, James, we expect you
or
to
maybe
be.
Maybe worse.
We'd expect you right now to be the 12 seed. Well, if they win out, what would they be, I'm saying?
I don't know. I think an SEC runner-up might still get seeded ahead of them.
Okay.
That's not out of the question, like a Georgia or a Texas or somebody
okay,
like that.
So let's say they're
in that league.
Hey, James, win your 6-11 or your 5-12, but then I think the thing he would have to do to get those people truly on his side is win the next game.
Yep.
But I do think that they're – how could there not be? You're paying the guy so much money.
That's what I mean.
Beat
I don't,
somebody that you haven't – you're not supposed to beat.
I don't even think they're out of the woods yet. I mean, they beat USC. Congratulations. You came back. It looked like same old for 30 minutes. I don't think Wisconsin's going to be an easy game for them.
I think this is a very dangerous game for them.
If they lose at Wisconsin and they lose at home to Ohio State.
Right, then he's right back in the soup.
And do you think that – I don't think they're going to make the playoffs at 10-2 with those two losses. Their best win would be at USC.
Correct. I mean, he's got to win the Wisconsin game. If he loses to Ohio State, he can still get in there. But I don't think
he's out of the woods.
I think they've softened a little bit, but I think there's a wariness on their part. If the wariness for Pitt fans is, can Pitt handle success? The wariness for Penn State fans is, James Franklin ever going to beat somebody we don't think on paper he's necessarily supposed to beat?
He won two big years, and he won two big games, and they got screwed by the committee. They beat Ohio State at home. It was a crazy game. It was a great win. And then they beat Wisconsin and T.J. Watt in the Big Ten championship game. And they've had wins over Michigan and Michigan State since. And they beat Auburn last year on the road. But I would not be happy if I were a Penn State fan. I'd say this is good, but we don't expect to be great every year. But we expect to be great more often than we are. 412-928-9370 if you want to chime in on that, on James Franklin. Here's the breaking Steelers news. Roman Wilson aggravated his hamstring today at practice, so he is back on the shelf. Must have aggravated it yesterday, because he did not practice at all today. So this whole
Tomlin's got to be beside himself at this point, I would think. He really does. I mean, we had that statement from Jeff yesterday, which, you know, Mike wants you available and out there. I detected, I don't know if you did, when Jeff brought that up, it almost felt like...
He's frustrated. Well, don't you think this would frustrate him even more?
Because you know what it is? It's soft tissue, and you just... I think if you're in Mike Tomlin's shoes, if it's not a torn ligament or something obvious, you're like, are you getting stretched out enough? Are you taking all the stuff you can control seriously enough about your physical well-being? I think that bothers guys like Tomlin.
Donnie, do you put two and two together if Roman Wilson's back on the shelf and even... further out of sight, out of mind because of an injury, do you think that makes the chances of them trading for Cooper Kupp even higher?
I don't really think it changes the chances all that much, because it did not seem like Roman Wilson was in their plans as is. I mean, the dude has one game where he got, what, a half dozen offensive snaps under his belt. I don't really think it changes the equation when it comes to them acquiring a receiver. I mean, do I still think they should? Absolutely, but that's not the question. I don't think he plays a factor in it, though.
I do think it's a bigger... If you would have told me before the season started, when we already thought that the Steelers had a serious wide receiver void of talent after Pickens, that Roman Wilson was not going to catch a ball the entire season,
mm-hmm.
I would have freaked out even more. And it looks like we're there right now, so even if he didn't factor into their plans because they were disappointed in him being able to pick up the offense, whatever,
sure.
Like the fact that an injury just makes it even more of a unlikely possibility that he contributes, I think makes it an even more pressing need for them. It has to.
I just wonder how – I think the thing that nobody really knows – I mean, we know that we hear they're in on Kupp, or that they weren't – you and I both heard they weren't really interested in Hopkins, which is still a strange sort of line.
Dulac said that too.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've all been hearing it from people behind the scenes, obviously. I don't know what it is about D-Hop. I just wonder if they feel like the need has to be addressed by a pretty top-shelf guy, or if they are looking more for a much better Van Jefferson, i.e. a role-player type in that offense, who's just obviously more gifted than Jefferson.
How about Pop? I mean, I was shocked to hear him say that he would not go all in on Cooper Kupp. There was a big-time reticence from Pop.
I know
is that the power of your rhetoric on the sports call, you think?
It might have been. It might have been, because I was really banging the table for why I thought it was a very questionable idea. I think in Pomp's case, though, Pomp is also a realist. He knows that Kupp is an injury risk, but he also knows that even with Cooper Kupp, I'm not saying there's a ceiling on this team. They'd be a lot more interesting than they've been in a long time, because he's a real honest-to-God weapon if he's healthy. It's still just hard when you look at some of the teams they'd have to climb over in the conference to imagine that being the thing that puts them over the top. That's all. Like, I know you feel very specifically about Baltimore a different way than a lot of people do. I still think Kansas City and Buffalo have a fear factor attached to them for most people.
Yeah, for me, that's true.
And I don't think Kupp changes
but
that.
But I always, with Bob, wonder when he comes out and he says that how much of that is because he's talked to Mike Tomlin for his Mike
He's
Tomlin
got some info behind this. Yeah, I think that's just smart to assume that when Pomp's saying that, it's at least with the unconscious knowledge that they might feel a certain kind of way.
412-928-9370. So Roman Wilson injured again. He wasn't playing anyways. Do the Steelers need Cooper Kupp? 412-928-9370. Is he the type of wide receiver you would go all in for? He plays tonight. He'll make his return. 412-928-9370. You want to weigh in on what we said about James Franklin? You can do that too. 412-928-9370. And anything you got on Pitt is Cowboy right next to Acrisure, as we're about 3 hours away from kickoff. Papiani and Dickerson standing by for Pitt football preview. Pitt trying to get to 7-0 for the first time since they were ranked number one back in 1982. Pitt is one of seven undefeated Power Four conference teams. That's all that's left.
Well, not Georgia.
Nope.
Not Bama.
Nope.
Not Texas.
Nope.
Ohio State is not unbeaten. Oregon is.
Mm-hmm.
Penn State is.
Yep.
Miami is.
Yep.
Hold on. I'll get them all. I think I'll actually do this. Michigan is not.
No, they've lost three times.
Yeah, they're actually like
bad.
Crap.
Their quarterbacks stink.
Am I missing an ACC team?
No, other than Pitt.
Big 12, then, I've got to look at.
Yep. Donnie, do you need to help Chris?
Is Kansas State one of them?
They are not. They've lost. They've lost to an undefeated team.
They've lost to an undefeated team.
Mm-hmm.
I should know this, then. I'm drawing little blanks
here. Oregon's
ranked
1, Penn State's 3, Miami's 6.
Who is the number 2 team that I am not thinking of here?
The team that's ranked 2nd is not undefeated.
Oh, Pony, this is, like, driving me nuts.
Oh, Milesy.
I've tried to... Milesy. Oh, Indiana's undefeated.
Yep, they're 13.
Kurt Cignetti.
Yep.
Two more?
Yeah, I'll just help you.
Yeah.
Iowa State's 10.
Ah, yes. Is Matt Campbell still coaching them?
He is. And BYU's 11. So Pitt is 1 of 7, and they're the lowest ranked.
That's where they should be,
of
though.
The undefeated teams.
I think they should be. Maybe not be... is BYU that good?
I mean, they beat Kansas State, I think, 38-9, and they went to SMU, I think, and won too.
Okay, that's a better. Those are both better wins than anything on Pitt's ledger.
Pitt's only played one winning team, and it was Cincinnati. And honestly, they needed
pee blood to get that done.
The best comeback in 50 years to win that game.
No, I think Pitt should be. I honestly, this might like surprise you. I don't know if I could put Pitt above like Army and Navy on these lists of like ranking the unbeaten's left period.
On. Really? I know you've got a little family tie with the Navy program, but...
Well, no, I mean, those teams have, like, bludgeoned everyone they've played.
Well, they've also played Charlotte and...
How about Memphis, though? Navy smoked them.
Memphis.
Was Memphis not, like, a fringe top 25 team, and Navy put the boots to them, man?
I think Memphis beat Florida State.
Yeah, so,
Florida,
like...
Florida State stinks, though. They're 1-6.
They're the worst team in the... How funny is that, by the way? They are the worst team in the ACC. You can actually say that. It's true.
And if their quarterback doesn't blow his ACL, they're in the playoff, and who knows what happens. My God.
What happens to the coach? What happens to Norvell there?
You can't fire a guy after an undefeated season, I don't think, even at a place like Florida State.
If he goes 1-11, what the hell are they going to do?
No, I don't think he can. I think he comes back on a very...
double-secret probation.
Pretty much.
I don't know. You know what I would like to see from Pitt, and I don't think I'm going to tonight because I think McCord...
A national championship?
No, I'm saying specifically tonight.
Win a game in a blowout so you can flip over and watch Cooper Kupp?
No, win a game convincingly like this against, a very quality offense. And I don't think they're going to do that because I think McCord is, frankly, too good this year. And I also, unless you have, like, an overwhelming advantage in terms of the caliber of player for your team. I think it's really hard in college football to just bludgeon somebody else.
Here comes a bunch of pretzel sticks, Mozzie. Are you allowed to eat these on Awaken 180?
I mean, I'll take a pretzel stick here. I'm going to take one of these. No, I'm not dipping
it in the
cheese.
How many calories do you think in one of those?
Probably like 200, 150. I don't know.
Donnie, remember the size of that pretzel you ate when we were at the casino together that time? That thing was massive.
Oh, I love going with a pretzel as an appetizer. I got one in Vegas at one of the places we were at.
Would you say, here, Donnie, I want a quick power ranking from you because I know you can do this fast. Give me your top five, like, typical restaurant pub food appetizers, brother.
Ooh.
Oh, chicken fingers. I mean, I'll take one. Thank you.
Putting that in a decisive order might take some time. But,
Our guy Fred is bringing stuff over while we're trying to talk. Give him just top five appetizers right off the top of your head. I'm talking loaded potato skins.
Yeah, I mean, the pretzel's definitely on there. Like, loaded nachos definitely on there.
I saw a nice nacho plate here
earlier. Do pita and hummus make it?
Hell no.
Nah, that wouldn't be in the top five.
Pita and hummus?
I would go mozzarella sticks on there for sure.
How about jalapeno poppers?
I do like those. I was going to say those are like little like hot pepper cheese balls maybe.
How about fried pickles?
Ugh, no.
Depending on the place. I'm not a pickles guy, though. But
wait, Donnie, stop. Stop right now. Pony just did something that I think is a really strange guy move.
What?
We both ordered Guinness's.
Oh, just drank it out of the can?
He's just drinking it out of the
can. I should have poured it, but I almost choked on this chicken tender, and I just needed to get it fast.
Okay. At least you have an explanation, because you said Guinness, and I was like, that's an inspired choice. I'll have one, too.
He's got to answer somebody's phone call so he can.
It's a real one, yeah.
Yeah, he's got to make sure everything's technically
I would say the pretzel, the actual chicken tender app. I'm not counting wings. It's their own thing. Fried pickles. I love the hummus and pita thing. Like
wings
I get down.
Often show up on a menu as an appetizer.
They're not.
I don't,
they're their
I don't,
own. They're their own category.
I agree.
It's like hot dog is just a hot dog. Wings are just wings.
Pitt's playing for respect tonight because of what I just said. They're the lowest ranked undefeated Power Four team.
Mm-hmm.
It won't be a huge audience outside of Pittsburgh because there's an NFL game going on at the same time, and I don't watch college games on Thursday night when there's NFL games going on. Oh, thank you.
Oh, man.
Now we're getting
those are your wings, Pony.
Oh,
these are yours.
You. Never mind.
Chalooch.
Sorry about that. That came fast. Look at the service here at Tequila Cowboy. Unbelievable. They're playing for respect, and I know I think it's like national respect, but also they do feel like a Rodney Dangerfield team around here. Because I think it's easier for people to recount the
horrifying things that have happened to them in the past than like, hey, remember when Pitt went out there and whooped somebody's ass? Like, some of those games are fun. Like, when they did it to Clemson with Kenny, when they were, like, kind of supposed to win that game and they handled them.
Yeah, but then they lost to Miami the next
week. Right. So there's always going to be when does the other shoe drop for them. But
and that's why
I want to see them beat Syracuse because Syracuse is the best team they've played this year, in my opinion. That's certainly the best offense.
You know what this kind of feels like to me as a Pitt analogy? It kind of feels like the basketball team with Capel that went to the tournament and won a couple of games because that team kind of came out of complete left field, right? I mean, they had no success under Stallings, obviously.
And then they just got Hinson and they got,
Well, and also, like, Capel was almost fired. If his buyout was lower, I think he would have been fired.
He was coaching for his job and everybody kind of knew
it. And that team had low expectations and they ended up giving everybody a great year. This team was 3-9 last year. I think that people would have probably said 6-6 would have been an improvement over last season.
Oh, I thought they were going to struggle this year too.
And not only are they undefeated and
hit their win total already,
they're mentioned with Alabama and Ole Miss as teams that could make the college football playoff for crying out loud at the midway point. But it looks like they have a great quarterback.
They have a great running back.
Yes, I mean, up until the Cal game, Eli Holstein was one of the great stories in college football.
He
might still be, but at least now we've seen them bleed, you know, like the guy, like Drago almost.
Well, you know what? Here's the other thing.
Right? I mean, 14-28, two interceptions.
He was not good in that game. Their defense won them that game, which honestly, I know we like Pat on this show. He's very good to us. They needed a game where Pat's defense actually carried the day.
Well,
against
because it shows they're a complete team.
Well, against a solid opponent. Too many times, and I think this eats at Pat a little bit, although he'd never admit it. So his best teams have been offensive teams. With big quarterback performances.
With Matt Canada coordinating
Canada and Peterman, Kenny Pickett, now Holstein. I will just quickly say this, in a very micro level, Pitt is always known among even their most ardent fans for, like, they stub their toe when they shouldn't. I will say that this team has flipped that script this year. You rally against Cincy, you rally against West Virginia, like, you actually destroy a Youngstown State who they, of course, famously
lost.
You pull
away from North Carolina.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. They've slayed a couple of their, like, typical dragons, right? Now one of the ones to slay here is, yeah, you got a pretty good opponent coming in, but you should beat them. Your favorite
is
to beat them.
This has always been an easy game for Penn.
I know, but still.
They've won 9 in a row here.
Kyle McCord is throwing for 360 a game. Go handle them. Just handle them in
this
game.
Yes, and their offensive line
looks like
guys like Mr. Hillgrove over here. I mean, their offensive line is, thank you. I mean, their offensive line at Syracuse is absolutely atrocious. The only reason why the guy hasn't been sacked more is because he's actually really good at getting the ball out on time.
Is Dom going to – what does Dom think?
Intern Dom. What did intern Dom say last night, Donnie? Did he make a prediction on this game?
He's got Syracuse winning. Close game, but Syracuse wins, he says.
Kyle McCord is the new Caleb Williams.
Yeah, what did he say about McCord? Did he say McCord's the real deal?
He's in love with him. The white whale, he called him. They gave us the white whale. He was out there on a silver platter.
Dom has a future in this
business.
A whale
on a platter is a.
He truly has a future. I think Pitt's going to win, though. I'm going to do a Costanza. Normally, I would pick them to lose here and just say, like, something horrifying is going to happen. They're going to slip on a banana peel. I think they're going to win 37. No, that's a weird number.
No, it's not.
38 to 31.
That's three field goals with their kicker.
38 to 31.
You're not saying, what was the score here a couple years ago, 76 to 61?
No, I was at that game. That game was so much fun to sit and watch. That was like watching 7-on-7 football at the major college level. It was unbelievable. When I say there were Pitt players running through like 20 with a beer bottle in hand.
Play every game this season.